thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wall. I'm here, my boy Will T. What's good, Will T?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I got breaking news, y'all. Real breaking news.
What's the breaking news?
I looked at my arm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dog, I don't know what's going on in life. I don't know what I did in the world. I saw a strand of gray hair, man.
Join the club.
On your arm, though? That's life now?
Nah, not on my arm, but
you know, I don't like the way you
said
know
that. My beard.
Nah,
I mean, you know, you nah, you know my, you see my beard, you see my hair.
Dude,
you know
I have gray in my beard, but that's self-explanatory. That happens.
But yours, you haven't reached the level of gray maturity.
Like you talking about Frederick Douglass?
Yeah, you're not on the level that I'm on.
Hey, gray on the arm, though? That's serious. Hey, that's some serious stuff, man.
I mean, you're maturing. You're getting older, man.
No, man. Look, this is not the Ten Commandments. I'm not Moses. I haven't seen God in person. You know what I mean? I don't need gray on my arm. Like, this is not life.
It is life. It's reality, man.
It's
just
reality.
Accept it. Accept it and move on.
All right, Will T, man. Let's do it.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
But real breaking news. Kirk Cousins to the 49ers, a done deal. We're going to have Anthony Raposa from the Warpath podcast to join us to discuss that. At 8:20, the Washington Wizards trade moves and Jason Smith not getting any burn. At 8:30, the Maryland Terps and their chances in the Big Ten tournament. At 8:40, we'll discuss the NFL Combine and the Redskins' potential draft prospects. Finally, we'll discuss Keith Thurman defeating Danny Garcia to unify the WBC and WBA welterweight titles. You saw that fight, Will T?
Absolutely.
It's enjoyable, right?
It was a good boxing match.
A good boxing match, right?
A lot of people wanted to fight, and I understand that, and I respect that. But UFC's on if you want a fight. This is boxing. Sweet science.
Oh yeah,
I had the brain freeze.
But we'll talk about that at around the 8:50 mark. But right now we have Anthony Raposa from On the Warpath podcast. Anthony, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Nothing much, Anthony. So we were getting ready to do the show about Jay Gruden's 2-year contract extension. You hit me up, and you told me the breaking news about Kirk Cousins possibly going to the Niners this season via trade.
Yeah, if you guys are on Twitter, I don't use it myself, but Chad Wico, RCC, at Chad Wico, RCC, his name is Chad Ryan. He's the CEO of Redskins Capital Connection. He put out on Twitter that there is breaking news. A source has reached out to Redskins Capital Connection and said that the Kirk Cousins to San Francisco 49ers trade is a done deal. Right now we don't have the specifics on that as far as what the compensation will be, or any other details beyond that. But it looks like we were the first to get the news that I'm aware of.
Will T, you want to say something?
Go ahead.
So, I'm going to your opinion, your idea, what do you think the compensation is? Do you think it's the second pick overall? Because that's what the 49ers have?
Well, okay, so let me say this. Just to be completely clear to everyone that's listening,
mm-hmm.
everything as far as this is what the compensation is just speculation on that end. Because, like I said, I have no idea what the speculation is,
mm-hmm.
If that's something they're still working on. But as far as that goes, I think that the fans probably have Kirk Cousins valued a bit higher than the rest of the National Football League does. In the simple fact that I believe that the 49ers know that Kirk Cousins doesn't want to be in Washington and that Washington is looking to just move him, seeing as he was going to be gone after this year anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins doesn't want to sign a long-term deal with the Washington Redskins. So I think that the compensation may be a little bit less than people might expect. If the second overall pick is acquired by the Washington Redskins, it would include the 17th overall pick that the Redskins have as well.
Oh, wow.
So my best guess would be I could see it being something like Kirk and the 17th overall pick for the 49ers, second overall, their third, and then next year's second, something like that. But The 49ers wouldn't completely trade out of the first. I wouldn't see that happening. Because, I mean, you have to think realistically, Kirk still would have to get a big deal done with the San Francisco 49ers. So the Niners are going to have to give up a nice pick and some nice trades, but then they're also going to have to eat up a very expensive Kirk Cousins contract as well.
So what do you have? So Kirk Cousins has signed the franchise
tag. No, he hasn't signed
so
the franchise
tag. So
what do you
have for that deal to go down? Would he have to sign the franchise tag?
Yes.
Yes, he would have to sign the franchise tag, and then he would have to agree on terms, you know, obviously with the 49ers after the trade.
This is amazing. This is true. This is definitely.
So there's definitely moving parts that would have to happen. But the information that I got was very straightforward, just that it's a done deal. So I think the next 48 hours will definitely be interesting for sure. I myself am very curious to see how long it takes for the big national media to pick up on it personally.
I'd be amazed that the Redskins would be willing to give up the 17th pick overall. I mean, I guess you're getting the second round, if that goes down. That's
I mean,
win,
if
right?
you if you're San Francisco, I don't realistically see how you would just totally trade out of the first round for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah,
right?
So it doesn't make sense.
So it would have to be some combination of, if it's true, because it's all speculation at this point, and it's still a lot of moving parts, as Anthony has stated. Washington would need to include their 17th overall pick, Kirk Cousins, and possibly another pick, another later round pick, to trade up to number two. Mm-hmm. And then San Fran would realistically probably give up, I don't know, a fourth this year, maybe a fifth, and then a second next year.
Hey, Anthony, what were you about to say?
I was going to say it you know, obviously the value just depends on what the 49ers have valued out, and that's what I was saying as far as it's really hard to really know that, you know, how high they value him, because we just saw John Lynch sign a guy who a lot of people didn't think he was worth the money that he got. So it's really, really hard, you know, from a fan standpoint and media standpoint to come up with numbers and trade values, because a lot of times we're kind of surprised with what those look like. But realistically, and Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network said this as well, when the trade does happen, it is going to involve, you know, the Redskins trading their first-round pick as well. It would be very, very unrealistic to think that the Niners would be willing to trade their second pick and not just, you know, not get anything complete trade on the first round, because they still have a lot of needs as well.
So, Anthony, what do you think Jay Gruden is thinking if this is true?
You know, that, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, obviously what he's thinking. Mm-hmm. I can't speculate what's going through his mind. So I'll answer more how I would think if I was in his shoes.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
And that's more so that, you know, we're talking about, you know, 11 starters on each side of the ball, and Kirk Cousins is one guy. And we see a lot of teams out there who have a great one quarterback, but the rest of the team stumbles. You know, look at the Indianapolis Colts. They have Andrew Luck. But look at the rest of their team when all the money's going into one guy. Look at the Baltimore Ravens, the New Orleans Saints. And you can go on and on. The Redskins do not want to be that. They don't want to put all their eggs in one basket on one guy, especially when, you know, there's a lot of holes on this team still. This team is I'm one of the people that doesn't think that they're as close as many other people think that they are. There's still a lot of holes that need to be fixed, and that money needs to be spread around. So I'm thinking that in his head, he's saying, okay, this gives us an opportunity to pay some other guys in free agency and kind of build around the quarterback. And really just depends on the philosophy of the people in the front office. You know, there's a lot of front office people that – saying you don't necessarily need the greatest, you know, an elite quarterback, but if you put him around great talent, kind of what the Cowboys did, you know, with Ezekiel Elliott and the weapons around him, he can perform. And I do know that there's people on the team that believe that Colt McCoy is a stopgap quarterback that can get them some wins until they can find a young guy to come in there and be the future.
So you mentioned Colt McCoy. What are your opinions about Colt McCoy? Because I actually think that he can be a stopgap guy myself. I don't think he's anything special about him. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. But I've always stated that I'm a believer that If we're talking about getting 9 wins, I don't think that Colt McCoy would struggle. I don't think it's impossible for Colt McCoy to get 9 wins for the Washington Redskins if they had the same roster within the wide receivers and, I mean, offensively the same roster with DeSean Jackson and, say, Pierre Garçon.
Well, I can tell you this, and I do know this from talking to players and people around the team. This team has always had a belief that Kirk Cousins is not $20 million more than Colt McCoy.
Okay.
There's people who think that there's not that big of a gap between Kirk and Colt. If that's true, you know, we'll see. But there are people on the team, and Colt McCoy is a very popular player on the team. Obviously, popularity doesn't turn into wins, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of people who believe in him. And I think that he is a guy that can get you some wins. Again, he's not necessarily a Pro Bowl quarterback, but he's a guy that gives you an opportunity to have someone that's cheap, and you can build up the defense around him, get in a few more weapons, and in the 2018 draft, which is a much stronger draft class for quarterbacks, possibly look for the future. And with that said, I can tell you right now, if the Skins end up getting the second overall pick, they're not going to be taking a quarterback.
Yeah, I doubt that myself. If you, speaking of the draft pick, if you were, say they get the second pick overall, we're speaking hypothetically, who would you select for the Washington Redskins? Obviously, the kid from Texas A&M wouldn't be there. He'd be the first pick overall. I don't think the Browns are dumb. Who would you pick number two?
I'm going either with Malik Hooker out of Ohio State, depending on his health. If he checks out and is completely healthy. Or Jamal Adams from LSU.
Like Jamal Adams.
One of those two kids. Because, you know, you can book both of those guys as future Pro Bowlers. I think both of those guys are going to be the top two best defensive players in the draft out that aren't named Myles Garrett. So, really, I think Malik Hooker would be the choice if he is healthy. I think, you know, obviously he didn't do much at the combine, so I think that's going to be a big question mark. But I think if he checks out, both of those guys. And from a PR standpoint, it makes a lot of sense because this is a position that the Redskins have been trying to figure out ever since the loss of Sean Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is something that, you know, everyone can kind of rally behind and get excited. You know, if you have Malik Hooker, for example, and Tua Cravens back there at safety, that's two young players who could turn into be something special. And I think that really solves their problems in the secondary.
So you're not concerned with Adams? Say they go Adams and his 40 times, I believe was like a 4.54. Would you be concerned with that?
No, because I don't. I think the combine for me is just a bunch of guys running around in underwear. I don't put as much stock into it as other people do. The stuff, if I'm a scout that I'm paying attention to, is getting to know these guys. How do they interview? Who are they as people? What kind of character do they have? How are they going to be around the team? Are they truly putting the team first, or are they about building their own brand? That's stuff that I care about. And that I think, you know, most likely people in the Redskins, depending on who's making decisions, because obviously we don't know what's really truly going on with McLuhan. I think that's stuff that they want to value. They want to get high character guys. Because if you really want to know what Jamal Adams is all about, go watch his tape. You know, the guy plays like Troy Polamalu. He has some Earl Thomas in him.
Mm-hmm.
You can really see who he is. You know, if you're really judging a guy just based on his 40-yard time as opposed to game speed, then that's your loss.
You listen to the Urban Sports Team, myself, Wally, also Will T, and we're on with Anthony Raposa from On the Warpath podcast. Anthony, Jay Gruden just signed a two-year deal. Were you a fan of that deal?
I mean, with the Gruden deal, I mean, it definitely makes sense. It's continuity. It's the first time that Dan Snyder has extended a coach since he bought the team. So I think it's a step in the right direction in the sense that it's very important to kind of, you have to do something that gets away from constant change, because if you're a Redskins fan, you know that the Redskins are just short of the Browns on a team that has an ever-revolving door of quarterbacks and coaches and players. I think this is a good sign for the team that they're committed to a guy. And realistically, you know, Jay Gruden has earned it. I think he's done things with a roster that to me isn't really not the greatest. And I think he's really got the best out of some of his players. And I think he's definitely trending in the right direction. So I don't think by any stretch of the imagination this is surprising.
And Anthony, how can folks listen to your show?
You can find us on RedskinsCapitalConnection.com. Our podcast is on there. You can also, if you have iTunes, you can just search Redskins Capital Connection and you can subscribe to the podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much any way that you listen to podcasts, you can find us on there. And then all forms of social media, if you look for Redskins Capital Connection on Facebook, we're on there as well. So yeah, anywhere that you can find Redskins Capital Connection, we're there.
All right, great. And Anthony, again, we always appreciate you here with On the Urban Sports Scene. Thank you for breaking the news here. We appreciate you. Anytime you want to come on, let me know, okay?
Cool. All right, you guys have a good night.
All right, take care. All right, that was Anthony Raposa from On the Warpath podcast. Will T, anything you want, you know, anything you want to talk about in terms of what he stated?
I think it's a lot to take in right now. Yeah. We headed to break?
Yeah, we're about to head to break.
All right, when we come back from break, I'll give you my thoughts.
Okay. Listen to Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listen to Urban Sports Scene. I'm here with Will T. I'm Wally. I'm still trying to get over this gray strand on my arm. Me and Will T talk about it during break. He's telling
get
me
over
I need to get over
just
it.
Just move past.
So if you all think I need to get over it, you know, tweet me at Urban Sports Scene or even call in the number 240-478-3140.
Please don't call in about Wally's one gray hair.
Look, like, this is serious, bro.
It's not.
This is serious. Like,
it's
like,
not that serious.
Like, I don't know. This isn't life. This can't be life.
What do you think? You hitting some midlife crisis?
Yes,
is this your midlife crisis?
Yes, I think so. You know, I think this is a sign I need to settle down. Like, oh, okay. I mean, this means like no more going out to Jasper's late night eating wings. No more going to strip clubs. Will, this is life now. This is life decisions that have to go on now. One strand of gray hair is just like messing up my whole mind state. My whole mind. This is terrible, bruh.
It's not that big of a deal.
It's big, dog. But anyway, before the break, you wanted to talk about what Anthony had to say about Kirk Cousins going to the 49ers, possibly going to the 49ers.
I think, really, if the reports, if you believe all of the reports that have been floating out there the past 2 or 3 weeks, then I think it's feasible that Kirk Cousins could go to San Fran, mm-hmm. right? You look at a couple of things, just me looking at a couple of things from afar, I kind of question. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I question is, if I'm San Francisco, why would I give up anything to obtain Kirk Cousins at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Because all right, if he doesn't sign the contract with Washington, then he plays this year, and then next year they can transition tag. Right, which I doubt they would do because that would be like what, $30 million?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a high likelihood that next year you let him play this year, and if Washington transitions him, you can agree to a trade next year.
Yeah.
Where I doubt that you'll have, you never know, but I doubt that you'll have the first or second pick. So you'll be giving up a lower pick next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then also, if Washington doesn't decide to hit him with the transition tag, mm-hmm. then he's able to walk free and you don't have to give Washington any compensation.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I can understand why you may decide to do it at this point. But to me, I think the smarter move would be if you San Fran to let it play out.
Yeah, I think they could let it play out. But we'll see when that goes down. But
then also you have Kirk Cousins not signing his franchise tag yet.
Yeah.
So that could be him trying to exert some little bit of power,
mm-hmm.
saying, okay, you know this is it.
Yeah.
I want to go to San Fran.
We all know what's going
on. So the best thing to do is just work on a deal for me to go to San Fran now, because yeah. I don't want to play here anymore.
You all don't love me.
You've shown you don't love me. Yeah. You haven't given me the money that I feel I deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So from a distance, I could see both sides of the coin. You can make a case for either one of those things happening, but I personally don't think that Kirk Cousins will be here after this season.
Okay, after the season.
I just don't. It just doesn't make sense to me.
So do you think he'll be here the upcoming season?
Even what
we just heard. Your thought process, because nothing's finalized.
Yeah, nothing's finalized.
Yeah, so.
I think he'll be here this year.
Okay.
But if you're Washington, it makes sense for you to trade him at this point.
Of course, because you know
it makes sense to trade him at this point, but I ultimately think he'll be here. He'll play under the franchise tag.
All right. So
because if you're Washington, you don't necessarily have a plan B. Colt McCoy is a stopgap.
Yeah. There's always Jay Cutler too, if you wanna work finagle a deal. But anyway, let's go to Washington Wizards, man. Let's go to our other DC family. One of your favorite guys, Ernie Grunfeld, right? Ernie Grunfeld.
Let me be precise when I say this. I don't have anything personally against Ernie Grunfeld. I just think his record as the GM of the Washington Wizards is not a record that provides a lot of confidence.
Granted,
we all make mistakes, but he's made mistakes, corrected them, made mistakes again, corrected them again. I just don't think, because to me, you kind of seem like you have to take a step back for every step forward you make. So that doesn't evoke a lot of confidence for me as a fan of this team.
All right.
So go ahead now, say it.
Okay, I'm just saying, over the last couple of weeks, the Wizards have acquired Bogdanovich. Mm-hmm. That's not right. Bogdanovich and Brandon Jennings. How would you rate those acquisitions by Ernie Grunfeld?
I think you lucked up with the Brandon Jennings, mm-hmm. but that's a good signing. You know, you
Ernie
get
Grunfeld.
A,
excuse me.
I think he fulfilled your biggest need, which is two of your biggest needs, mm-hmm. which is a backup point guard and a guy who off the bench can create his own offense for himself and others.
You know Trey Burke, right?
Don't get me started with Trey Burke.
No, I ain't saying nothing, man.
Then the Bogdanović trade, while in the short term, in the interim, it looks good, but I'm thinking big picture, long term for this team. To me, it doesn't bode well. He's a restricted free agent, so you have the right to match any offer that he gets, right?
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, Vlade Divac, the GM of Sacramento Kings, is in love with this guy.
Oh, is he really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So
you think it'll be Sacramento after the season?
No, I think Vlade Divac is going to offer a huge contract to the – I'm not going to say a huge contract, but he's going to offer a contract that the size that – if you're Washington, is going to put you over the luxury tax long term, because you still have to think, you have to sign Otto Porter. And I know that you, with the trading of Andrew Nicholson, you get $19 million off your cap, right? So you reduce your cap by over the long term, $19 million. But you still have to sign Otto Porter.
Yeah.
Then you would have to sign John Wall in the next 2 years. Sign John Hall. He's going to get a max contract.
Oh, easily, yeah, big time max deal too.
And then you're going to have to sign. You're going to have to make an offer to Bogdanović, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, I think While in the interim, he's done some great things for this team, and his style of play bodes well with this team. You know, he's a guy who likes to shoot jumpers from the corner. Yeah. John Wall is a guy. John Wall and Brandon Jennings are two guys who can get into the lane and create shots for themselves and others. Mm-hmm. He definitely adds added versatility and punch to your second unit from an offensive perspective. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't address one of the things that I thought was this team was lacking, which was interior defense on the second unit. But then again, you know, you have to trade off the offensive explosion that he brings. And also if you had retained that first round pick, I know it would have been a lower first round pick in the 20s, but that's a guy that you would have conceivably had for 4 years on a rookie contract, which would have done wonders for your salary cap and your ability to go out and add pieces going forward to this team.
You say inside play, they got Yal Mahimi. He's supposed to be that dude. I'm gonna talk about him later. Don't get me started. I like Bogdanovich. What I like about this game is that he's a scorer. He's more than just a 3-point shooter. I thought he was just a 3-point shooter. I mean, he's averaging about 15 points a game.
He's a scorer. He's not a guy that's going to create shots for him.
Oh, no, not at all. He's not that guy, but he's a guy that's aggressive once he gets the ball. Like, for instance, if John Wall kicks it out, so he's just not going to shoot the three, he may drive it to the basket and try to finish. He doesn't, you know, he's a scorer. He has a scoring mentality. For a shooter, he's a scoring mentality. I'm with you. You don't know in the long run what he's going to bring to the table for this team, if he's going to be here in the long run. I like the combination of him and Brandon Jennings. I think Brandon Jennings brings a lot more punch off the bench, and he's aggressive. Something about Trey Burke. I mean, we joke around about Trey Burke, but Trey Burke forgot that he was actually a decent basketball player if you watch him play.
No, I mean, when he was in Utah that first season, he had a pretty good rookie season.
It's as if he forgot to play basketball. He forgot that he could do things in the NBA. Brandon Jennings doesn't lack confidence. That's one thing he doesn't. So I just feel like all coming off the bench, they have guys who feel like they can put up numbers against your starting unit or your second tier unit in terms of the opponents. And then you have that with a Brandon Jennings and a Bogdanovich. So in my opinion, that's why it works well for the Washington Wizards. There's more confidence coming off the bench. But speaking of the bench, since the All-Star break, Jason Smith has barely touched the floor. Should he be getting more minutes, say, compared to a Yan Mahimi, because in my opinion, I think Jason Smith deserves to have more playing time.
Well, you have to understand, Mahimi is the only He's your second best interior defender.
Who's your first?
Cortot.
You think so? Rebound. Well, he rebounds. He rebounds. He gets bullied around the paint to me.
But Cortot is your best. Realistically, is your best.
I guess. I don't know.
Interior defender. Mahimi's a shot blocker, which is something.
Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying.
That you don't have on this roster. You don't have another guy that can contest shots at the rim and also rebound and give you a little bit of offense with his back to the basketball. You have Markieff Morris, who's a stretch four. Realistically, should be in some lineups should be playing a three.
Yeah.
Can't play the three.
Can't play the three, yeah.
Specifically, if you go back to when they faced Utah, I think it was last week or the week before last.
When they got beat.
Yeah, when they got out-rebounded by like 27 rebounds. Oh, my God.
I was at that game. Whitsnake dominated.
Gobert. Rudy Gobert. Yeah. Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors dominated.
Yeah, 20 boards.
Yeah.
We had 20 boards.
Jason Smith isn't the guy. You know, he gives you that element that you know that they're trying to play, that pace and space. He gives you that element. He's a good jump shooter from the four and the five position, but he gives you no interior defense.
Yeah, his defense isn't. I don't think that's I don't think the fall off between him and Mahimi is that serious.
Defensively,
not really, because their defense still isn't that good. I feel like Jason Smith brings a lot of energy to the team, and he's not an offensive liability.
He's a glue guy.
He's a glue guy. If you see it, really, to be honest with you, he is a glue guy. Jason Smith for this team was playing great basketball. And you mentioned when John Wall's in the game with him, They run the high screen roll. He pops out, open jump shot in between Jay. Then he can spread a he can spread the five to the 3-point line, giving John Wall more room to drive because Jason Smith is hitting the three now this season. There's a lot that he brings to the table for the Washington Wizards. When I look at Mahimi, I see nothing but missed layups a lot. I see missed layups. I'm like, you just waste the basket.
You don't see protecting the rim?
I don't see Dikembe Mutombo.
I'm not saying Dikembe Mutombo. Don't get me wrong.
But
I'm saying you see a guy with the ability who can alter a shot.
I don't see it that way. I saw Jason Smith at times, and in the beginning of the season, I didn't even like Jason Smith. I thought he was playing like a complete bum. But towards that stretch run when they were winning on that home game winning streak, I saw a guy playing good defense, being a guy who was blocking shots, getting rebounds,
adequate defense.
I thought it was good enough. But to me, if you put together what Jason Smith was doing defensively, if you say adequate, and it combined that with offense, I think together is a better player than Yan Mahimi.
Plus, you're forgetting the fact that
is that money?
I don't like to call out and say how much a guy's getting paid a year, but Mahimi is a guy that for the next 4 years is going to be making a significant amount of money.
$64 million. It is what it is.
You said it.
It is what it is.
He's a guy. Yeah. So you know, he was a signing of Ernie Grunfeld. So no, I'm not saying it in a bad way, but I'm pretty sure that Ernie has, you know, communicated to Scott Brooks that, you know, this is a guy I want to see get into the lineup. Let's see what he can bring to our team. We already know that.
What Jason has to bring to
what play. Jason has, and we know that we don't have any guys outside of Gortat who can defend the paint. So let's see what Mahimi gives us.
So we had some Facebook responses about, you know, comparing Jason Smith and Mahimi. My man Billy said Jason Smith needs to see more game time because he plays defense and has offense that Mahimi doesn't have. I told you, some people think he has
defense.
Offense. So I'm telling you, haven't said that Mahimi. Ooh. But no. Is it haven't said that Mahimi's defense is superior to Smith's by far. So he's saying that Smith plays decent defense. My boy Keith Stover said, split the time. I think Mahimi has been getting 22 minutes lately. So split it 11 apiece. The second unit is more fluent when he plays. Speaking of Jason Smith, they are more fluent when Jason Smith plays. My man Maurice says situational. Use Smith for scoring and Mahimi for defense. And Mike says play Jason Smith over Mahimi.
I mean, look, Washington has – Ernie has wanted to play pace and space. Mm-hmm. Jason Smith allows you to space the floor out when he's on the floor.
Yeah.
Yan Mahimi – his range is pretty much foul line on in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's a guy that while, you know, your guard, you know, your Bradley Beal, John Wall, and now Brandon Jennings, those are guys who have the ability to get into the paint. Mm-hmm. But Mahimi's a guy who blocks up the paint. So I get it. Jason Smith spaces the floor, spaces the puts more stress on the defense.
Yeah. So, I mean, only time will tell. Wizards are still doing well. Third place right now in the Eastern Conference. I mean, let's see them as the second overall seed in the Eastern Conference. But the Terps finished second in the Big Ten. Do you see them winning the Big Ten tournament? We'll discuss that after the break. It's the Urban Sports Saying.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Looking for sports here in the Tri-City area like you haven't heard before? Check me, yours truly, Mike Knox and the Solon Sports, weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. right here on Fox Sports Radio, 1340 a.m. Hopewell.
The ball is tipped. There you are. You're like,
what's your infatuation with this song? Does this song bring some feeling of nostalgia to you?
Yes, man. You don't like One Shining Moment? You know, when I think about One Shining Moment,
you think of the NCAA championship game.
Yeah, you know which one I think of, though?
What?
I think about the one that, like, Miles Simons, like, took over. the tournament for Arizona. Yeah, for some strange reason, this song embodies this song, and vice versa.
You and your brother, you have a strange affection for this song.
This song is awesome, man. There's one shining moment.
I remember one time, I think we went out to go watch the NCAA championship game, and the game was off. I was like, all right, I'm about to go. You ready? He was like, nah. I was like, there's nothing else more for us to see. They got to cut down the nest and they have to sing One Shining Moment. I was like, and to this day, I still don't get your infatuation with it.
Hey, man, Luther, Teddy Pendergrass is the best one, though. Teddy was the best. The best One Shining Moment track ever. All right, man, you listen to Urban Sports Scene with my boy Will T. I'm Wally. We mentioned before the break about the Terps. Right now finished the season at second place in the Big Ten, winning their last game of the season beating Michigan State 63-60. Who would you right now for the Maryland Terps? Who would be their biggest or most dangerous opponent in the tournament?
To me, it's the team they just beat.
Okay,
Michigan State. March. This is Tom Izzo's time. Specifically Big Ten tournament and into the NCAA tournament. Tom Izzo is one of the, if not the best college basketball coach, he's definitely top five.
Yeah.
He gets his team ready to play come this stretch of March, specifically because they play such a tough out-of-conference schedule to start the year off.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to some people, that says that hurts them because that affects their win-loss record. To me, I think that mentally prepares them for this championship run.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with you, Michigan State. Obviously, and they're playing good basketball in the stretch run. So I want to say Michigan State. Right now, Maryland, and they finished the season 24-7. Melo Trumbo was, I believe, first team Big Ten. So they're a dangerous team. They overachieved this season.
I think he was unanimous.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so. Yeah, and they overachieved this year. I don't think that no one really expected them to finish this high.
Absolutely, they lost Diamond Stone, Jake Layman, Robert Carter.
Yeah.
So a lot of people thought that this team wouldn't be a team in the top 25, but Melo Trumbo, he made the correct decision to come back to school, and look what he's done. Yeah. Maybe he improved his draft stock some.
I don't think so. I think the NBA always looks, they frown upon you when you stay in school, like you had SARS or something.
Yeah, I mean, I never understood it. You know, to me, it's like the less tape that the NBA has on you, the better your draft position to be.
Yeah,
because
seriously,
they always feel as if, well, he hasn't reached his potential and I can be the one that can get him. We can be our organization can help develop him and take him to the next level. Yeah. I never understood.
Because he has all the measurables to be a great basketball player, but knowing that this kid probably in Europe only averaged like 5 points a game.
That's another thing that kills me. these guys play over in these European leagues, and I understand that
it's a professional league.
I understand it's a professional league, and a lot of them have been pros since they are like 16, 17.
Yeah.
But you look at the, and I know statistics
don't tell
the whole story, right?
Yeah.
They get excited over a guy that averages 3 points and five rebounds and say he's a top 10 talent.
Yeah, it's like you're exaggerating, like me exaggerating about this gray strand on my arm. It's just exaggerating
okay,
the whole thing.
Okay, here we go.
I'm with you.
I get it.
But yeah, so somebody like Melo Trumbo is going to pay for staying in school because they have so much tape on his basketball game.
In reality, if he had came out after his freshman year, he probably would have been a first-round pick,
which is crazy. By staying in school, has become a better, stronger basketball player.
He's become a better point guard.
Exactly. That's which amazes me. But another team that I feel like will challenge Maryland is Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin's brand of basketball is physical, and it's always good around the tournament time.
That's a good one. That's another one that I was debating between Michigan State and Wisconsin. But ultimately, I went with Michigan State.
Yeah. But again, I understand why you go with Michigan State. Like, who doubts Izzo? You know,
I sure as hell don't.
Yeah, exactly. And
depending on how the bracket is stacked, line by line,
you know, chances are he can get to a Final Four.
Yep.
He got Bridges.
Yep.
And
He's got talent.
That's the one that he's got talent. So if Izzo does what he does in terms of coaching and putting his kids in the right position to win, which I don't doubt that he will. I think he'll definitely do that. He'll definitely have this team in prime position to do something special when it comes to the to actual March Madness. Question though, if the Terps do win this win the Big Ten tournament, where would you what seed would you have them in the Big Dance?
I still wouldn't put them any higher than a.
I've heard
a fourth, maybe. No higher than a fourth, but most likely a fifth.
Could you possibly see them as a seventh seed, even if they won the Big Ten tournament?
As a second?
Seventh.
Seventh? If they won the Big
Ten? I saw reports like
that. No, I don't think Maryland would be a seventh seed if they won the tournament.
If they didn't win the tournament, what seed would they be going into the dance? A seventh?
Probably a seven to eight.
So the Big Ten is really a down season for the Big Ten.
It is. The ACC is very strong.
I know.
Another thing I was going to say about Tom Izzo, depending on, it's not about necessarily the teams and the talent of the teams that Michigan State's it's the coaches.
It's the coaches.
So if Tom Izzo is in a region with far less superior coaching, I'm picking Tom Izzo to bring them out of to the Final Four.
No, I agree with you. I think Tom Izzo is that dude. Like if it's Tom Izzo, you sure? Like Tom Izzo is Rick Pitino. Those are two coaches in my opinion that own the tournament. Yeah. They may. I'm not even talking about winning. Like winning is not what I'm talking about, but maximizing what they have in terms of talent and having that talent compete on a round by round basis in the tournament. They're that coach. You know what I mean? So it's interesting to see. But hopefully the Maryland Terps do win the Big Ten and, like Will T said, maybe become a 4 or 5 seed. So that would be a cool thing. I would talk about the Hoyas, but I'm all about fire John Thompson. Anyway,
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
A little bit?
We'll just talk about for a little bit.
All right, yeah. Sure.
I mean, no. We're going to break. Let's do it when we come back.
Yeah, we can do it after the break. Let's do it after the break. Listen to Urban Sports saying.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I seen your girl post a BM. So I hit her in the DM. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, that's your man. I hate to be him.
I'm Rashawn Ross. I listen to Urban Sports Scene.
You listen to Urban Sports Scene. Will T had a great point. You know what I mean? He talked about the Georgetown Hoyas. I brought it up a little bit because, you know, I'm really not a fan of head coach of the Hoyas, JT3. But, Will T, what did you want to say about JT3 and the Hoyas situation?
I know we're late with it, and, you know, it's way out of the news cycle. But did you get a chance to read the column? I think it was last week about JT3.
I probably read the first paragraph of it. Can't remember. I just know that like Mike Wise had posted something on Twitter about how bad this is the first time he's ever seen like a Hoyas the Hoyas fan base lose confidence in what's going on in Georgetown. You know, they're signs saying fire JT3.
Well, that's not even the most interesting part of the article.
Are we talking about his father?
Yes.
Yeah.
The most interesting part of the article was definitely
heard that. I read
I think it was who wrote the article. Mike.
You talking about Mike Wise?
Yeah, Mike article? Wise wrote the article.
Okay.
And he had four anonymous sources, mm-hmm. all former Georgetown players.
Yeah.
Oh, none
yeah.
of them would put their name behind.
Of course not.
You want to know why?
Yeah.
Because out of fear of Big John.
Of course,
Thompson.
You know it. That's obvious.
I was thinking that is crazy,
dude. It's the same dude that grabbed his kids away from Rafer Edmonds. Like they're like he intimidates the program. You know the reason why they won't fire his son is because of that money.
He has too much pull within that program. Well, and I honestly don't think JT3 should be fired.
I honestly think he should be fired. It's to a point where, you know, I've watched you're a Georgetown fan. I've watched the Hoyas for years, and I've loved the program. I've loved what it stood for, in terms of the style of play, the physicality. It was, we are Georgetown. We're tougher. We have a brand of basketball that shows intimidation, you know. And I thought he was trying to bring in when he had Jeff Green, Hibbert. Like it was skilled, but they still brought toughness. Those guys were still tough. They were raw. They were gritty. And he maximized their potential. So I give him credit. Like I was a fan of JT3, but over the years
you were.
That's past tense. I was. Yeah, I'm not a fan of him anymore.
Okay. Because
like when I'm looking at him now, he hasn't evolved and he hasn't changed up to what he wants. He hasn't changed up for what the college game is from his opponents. His opponents have caught up to his style. All right.
Yes. And by that style, you mean the Princeton offense.
He's tried to change it. I don't think he has tried to change it, but it's just not working for him. Like he's tried defensively. He wanted to be more of a pressure defense, say like a VCU, right? He started the season pressing more, but it didn't work, right? But it's his coaching in situations that has been his real flaw. And that has been his real flaw for 3 years. Now, for instance, I'll give you an example. If I'm playing a guard-powered team that can dribble, who can break me down ISO, and my guys can't stay in front of them. And they have shown consistently they can't stay in front of this guard. What defense do you go to?
Go to his own.
He will stay in man. If I'm showing you that I'm playing man defense and my man defense is – I mean, I'm playing a 2-3 zone and it's super effective. There have been years their 2-3 zone has looked as good as Syracuse. He has gotten out of it and just been stubborn to go back to man. So it's just like he doesn't adjust to it. He doesn't adjust. I'm on a record. I'm going to tell you this. And I put it out there on social media first. A guy that I would love to be the head coach for the Georgetown Hoyas is in the NBA. He's an assistant. And he's been getting screwed for NBA coaching head jobs for a while. He was a center for the New York Knicks. He was a center for the Georgetown Hoyas. His name is Patrick Ewing. And I think he brings traditional clout. He brings that, okay, Big John, I love you clout. And I think he's a guy that embodies Hoya basketball.
So I think your last point was an excellent point.
Yeah.
Patrick Ewing would bring a sense of nostalgia back to Georgetown and would create a sense of excitement and a sense of trust amongst the fan base and the alumni. Mm-hmm. I want to tell you, you made some very valid points about JT3. His I'm not going to say his inability, but his stubbornness to stick with a certain strategy, independent of what's going on in the game.
Yeah.
But to me, you can win with the Princeton offense. The principles of the Princeton offense is nothing but spacing, back cutting, ball movement, and balancing the floor.
Which is not bad.
Which is NBA basketball, yeah. Which is basketball in its purest form.
Yeah, totally.
The problem is, and JT3 is doing a great job of recruiting talent.
He is.
To the school. He isn't recruiting the talent that can play in that offense.
I totally agree.
That's the biggest problem. Yeah, I still think you don't – if you – look, you've been doing it as long as he has. You've been around legends, like his father. And then I'm forgetting the guy who coached.
Pete Carrell.
So you've been around legends, right? You need to tweak things. You need to adjust certain things for it to fit into the style of play of the players that you have. But to me, it's about the talent playing in the system. Mm. He isn't getting the talent that's right for the system. He's going out and he's doing a great job of recruiting top talent.
He is.
But he isn't recruiting the type of guys
like
who have the intellect that can play in a Princeton style offense.
Yeah, go ahead,
that's one. And for two, I've been to the Verizon Center to go see Georgetown games.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the current McDonough isn't just for a program on campus, which is on campus, isn't just for a program that's historic as Georgetown. But going and playing in the Verizon Center, if you're Georgetown, you don't have a home court advantage.
Yeah.
The Verizon Center holds 20,000 people. Mm-hmm. Realistically, you need to – I don't know where they would build it or how they would build it, but they need to create a gymnasium on campus that's smaller and that's smaller where they can create a true home court advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, a lot of people say, well, they've been playing at the Verizon Center. Prior to that, they were playing at the Capitol Center.
Yeah.
So, don't give me, they've been winning all this time, but I think they need to create a true home court advantage. That's just my perspective. And a third thing is, kind of got a brain freeze. I think he needs to adjust, you know, in-game strategies a little bit. But, you know, like you said, I think the only hire that would probably work is, A, you have to go and talk to John Thompson Jr. and say, look, we're thinking about, you know, letting JT3 walk.
That's the truth, yeah.
And then the reality is it's not going to be framed as a firing. It's JT3 is going to walk away with a lot of money.
Yeah, he's going to resign with a lot of money.
And I think the only guy that would really work to bring back that Georgetown nostalgia, that brand of Georgetown basketball, would be Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, I just think that'd be a good hire, especially what's going on now. You need to.
But let's get this straight. JT, Big John, I'm not advocating for firing your son. That's Wally. You run up on Wally. You know, I don't want to.
I love the original. I love Big John. That's my dude. Y'all know I'm a big fan of him. I got his autographed towel, man. He's my dude, man. Y'all talk about Hulk Hogan. That's my dude.
To me, I always thought that John Thompson Jr. is Black History.
He is
Black History. You know, if you, for those of us who grew up in this area, or as we say, area,
yeah.
that from around here, Georgetown. This may be a little bit politically incorrect, but to me, Georgetown and the in the 80s and the early 90s represented Black power.
It did. No, it did. I thought, look, real talk, I thought Georgetown was an HBCU growing up. That's how it was. Seriously. That's how big John Thompson was. I thought, I told my dad, like, my dad was like, yeah, man, I'm going to go to Georgetown. It's a Black school. He was like, no, it's not a Black school. So to me, like, that's what it represents. I love, like, Coach Thompson is it to me. So when Will T says, like, I feel bad for like wanting his son fired, but it's the truth. I do, but it's not a knock on you, Coach Thompson. You're like it to me. What you brought the program to is the reason why I want your son fired. If that makes any sense, it's because of what he brought the program to.
His son won't go out on a losing season. It would be framed as, you know, his son taking the program to a certain point, getting them back to a certain point, and then they would work out some way for him to walk away.
He can resign. It's cool. I'm not wrong. I'm not mad at him resign. He can resign. He can go away. He can resign. If he wants to be AD, go be AD. Just don't be the head coach of Georgetown. Anyway, Keith Thurman.
One time Thurman
beat Danny Garcia. I mean, yeah, Danny Garcia. I thought I was saying something else.
Danny Swift Garcia.
Thank you. Danny Swift Garcia on Saturday. I actually thought Danny Garcia was going to win that fight. I really did. But did that fight uplift boxing? We'll discuss that after the break. It's the Urban Sports Saying.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LLQJ with a triumphant comeback. For a solo. But tonight, don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. What's up with fear? Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion.
One time I was gonna knock out Danny Garcia. It didn't happen. Yeah, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene. Excuse me, my boy Will T, myself, Wally. All right, Will T, on Saturday, was it PBC? That's what it's called.
It was on, yeah,
PBC CBS.
Yep.
Danny Garcia took on Keith Thurman. One time showed you that he can box. It wasn't just a guy that, you know, had power. Just not the guy with just power in both hands. He was a guy that can, you know, box and show the world that, you know what, I could take the first couple, I could take the first 5-6 rounds, and I could show y'all my boxing style of, you know, sticking, moving, and whatnot. But he unified the welterweight titles of the WBA and the WBC. What were your thoughts of the fight?
I thought it was a good fight. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a good boxing match.
Yeah.
Not fight, but I thought it was a good boxing match. Some people were upset with Keith Thurman in the last two rounds, particularly because he got on his bike, he moved, he didn't really engage Danny Garcia like he did the previous 10 rounds. Mm-hmm. So you had fans booing, you know, fans booing in the 11th and 12th.
That's,
and also
New York fans, that's what it is.
And then also people booing, I think, during a lull in the 8th, mm-hmm. because there wasn't enough action. But Keith Thurman, he fought a smart fight. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people thought that just because he came in with such a high knockout rate, mm-hmm. knockout percentage of his victories, that he was just going to, you know, he was a guy, he was a one-trick pony, he was a power puncher, he didn't know how to box, he wasn't a good defensive fighter, but he fought a very smart tactical fight against Danny Garcia.
Yeah, I thought he did too. I thought, you know, he had more of the solid punches at the top, you know, within the top five rounds. I didn't have a problem with him, quote unquote, running. I don't think he ran. He boxed. He, you know, he was up, and he knew he was up. My only fear that I thought he was coasting a little bit too much towards the latter half of the fight, because we all know in boxing, you know, if it's close enough, you can be, quote unquote, be screwed or whatever. Because I had it, to be honest with you, on my card, I had it 7-5. I don't know what you had it in your card. I had 7-5 on my card.
Yeah, I actually had it 7-5.
Yeah.
Also.
So,
well, no, excuse me, I had it more like 8-4.
Yeah. So I had it 7-5, and I can see how people had the little swing. Like, there are a couple rounds, or there's one round that I can see going 8-4. So, mm-hmm. I mean, so I wasn't like a solid 7-5. I was like, I have it about 7-5. So it was pretty fair. But you never know when judges, you know, some judges may have had it closer because they may have felt one round was a swing round.
Yeah, I mean.
So I just felt, I felt like the most it could have been was a draw. But I didn't think that
I didn't think it was
the most, you know, within a judge's decision or whatnot.
To me, I watched a fight with my cousin. Me and my cousin, we watched a fight. And I told him, after the fight was over, we both thought that Keith Thurman won.
Yeah.
But I told him Keith Thurman's going to win by a split decision. He was like, a split decision?
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I said, watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when they announced that, I think it was 115, 113, Danny Garcia.
Yeah,
I told him, yeah, because it was stylistically was a good fight, but there were some rounds that were harder to judge because Danny Garcia was landing clean left hooks.
Mm-hmm.
And in the mind of a judge, to them, when they're judging the fight, if you see a guy land one clean effective punch,
mm-hmm.
or the harder
or
hardest power punch in that round, 9 times out of 10, they're going to give it to that guy, independent of the other guy's accuracy or activity.
Mm-hmm.
And there were points in the fight where Danny Garcia landed big left hooks,
mm-hmm.
to Keith Thurman, and I think there was one time when he landed a jab that really snapped, Keith Thurman's head back. And to me, that's probably the reason why you got the fight, why you got a split decision versus a unanimous decision for Keith Thurman.
Yeah. When I heard the split decision, I was like, when I heard this, it's a split decision, I was like, I'm not surprised. Then it was like, I hope they don't screw Keith Thurman. Again, I'm a guy who was rooting for Danny Garcia. So it's not.
I can't say I was rooting for any guy specifically, but I thought that Danny Garcia was going to pull it out because there have been times where I've doubted Danny Garcia
exactly.
in the past, and he came out and he pulled it out. So I just thought, I said, okay, I'm not going to, not that I bet on the fight, but I'm not going to doubt Danny Garcia's ability to pull this one out.
So was this fight uplifting for boxing?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a fight between two undefeated fighters in their prime on regular free TV,
mm-hmm.
at a primetime slot.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Where there wasn't, I mean, it was up against UFC, but I don't think it was a major, what you would call a major UFC card.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was in Barclays Center in New York. So I think it was a good night for boxing, you know, particularly, you know, some people are going to question how it was a split decision for Keith Thurman versus a unanimous decision, like I said earlier. Yeah. But I think it was a good night for boxing. It's one of those little steps forward that you're going to keep taking. And then I think we're going to see some good fights this year. You know, Keith Thurman has the opportunity potential. Well, he has a mandatory against Lamont Peterson. That's going to be a hell of a fight.
I would love to see that.
I would love to see that fight. I would love to see it in D.C., but I don't think
it's
going to happen. then also you have Sean Porter versus Andre Berto. Then, you know, we have on Cinco de Mayo, you have Canelo versus Chavez Jr.
I want to see that a while ago. It's kind of late now.
Kind of late.
Yeah, I think it was a long time ago.
I think it would have been a far more exciting fight a long time ago, but it's still going to be an exciting fight. It's going to be an interesting, exciting fight. And then, you know, you have Triple G versus Danny Jacobs in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Not even 2 weeks, next week.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on, we could possibly see Canelo versus Triple G. And then also, you also have the opportunity to see a rematch between a fight last year that was a great fight with Andre Ward versus
Kovalev.
Yeah. So I think, you know, positive steps forward, man.
Could we possibly ever see a rematch between Danny Garcia and Thurman? I thought it was a really good fight. I was really enjoyed about it. I'll say this.
If the money's right, you'll see it. I know Angel Garcia was on the podium after the post-fight screaming that we're no stepping stone for anyone, but if the money's right, then you'll definitely see that fight.
Yeah, I agree. Well, anyway, we're about to wrap this show up, Will T, man. What do you want to say to our listeners, man?
Thank you all for listening to us. You know, we aren't journalists. We're just two guys who enjoy sports. Talking like we're not really talking like we were talking to barbershop because we gotta clean up the language a little bit. And plus we're not drinking.
Yeah, we're not. We always drink usually when we're at the bar. So we'll talk.
That's what we're gonna do next show. We're gonna just throw it all out the window. We're gonna drink, talk.
I'm down with that.
All right, man.
I'm down with that.
We're gonna do that.
And also I didn't give a shout out. Ray Jeezy wasn't able to do the show today, but we'll have
him. He never does the show. What are you talking about? He never does the show.
Yeah, last couple weeks, you're right. He hasn't been on. Yeah. You're right, man. We're trying to get Ray Jeezy back on. And also, shout out to CC Towns. Happy birthday. It's her birthday. Happy birthday, CC. So make sure you check out her blogs on GladiateHers.com. So make sure you check her out. And also follow her on Twitter at GladiateHers. But anyway, man, like Will T said, we always appreciate you all listening to the show. Make sure you tune in next week. You listen to the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Excuse me. Amen. Lead us out, homie. Swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, man. Hey, swag.